Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah.
Welcome to a brand new week of Drive Time Sports. KOL 107.3 FM, 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to get back in here after a long weekend and talk some both local and national sports. And that's exactly what we have planned on the show today. A quick recap of everything that happened over the weekend. I mean, there was a lot. The NFL draft wrapped up, and that was fun, entertaining. The Broncos drafted Mr. Irrelevant Chad Kelly. That was the big story on the final day of the NFL draft. A very talented quarterback with some NFL ties. He's got that pedigree, the nephew of Jim Kelly, but really, really falling because of some off-the-field decisions that he has made. Maybe the Broncos got their guy. I'm intrigued by the Broncos' quarterback situation going into the offseason. I love it. Trevor Siemian, Paxton Lynch, and Chad Kelly. I think all three of these guys can play in some capacity. That was the big story in the NFL draft on the final day, which was Saturday. We got a break from it on Sunday, but we had a huge game. The biggest win that the Jazz have had in the last decade. They knock off the Clippers 104-91. They move on to the semifinals of the Western Conference tomorrow. They'll take on the Golden State Warriors right here on KOL. We're going to be talking a lot of Utah Jazz basketball in the coming days as they continue the season. Hey, they're down to the final eight teams in the NBA all in general. So the Jazz have put together a brilliant year. Do I give them a chance to beat Golden State? No, I give them no chance. I thought they had a chance to beat the Clippers. I was wrong. I didn't think the Jazz could get Game 7 on the road. Chris Paul was not good. Best player in the series, Chris Paul, and he was not good in Game 7. The Jazz played lockdown defense. They played their style of basketball, and they did that despite the fact that Rudy Gobert did not convert a single field goal, and he had four rebounds because he couldn't stay on the court because of foul trouble. The Jazz found a way to get that win. That was just a gutty, gritty performance. It's no knock on Utah. I don't think anyone can play with Golden State in a seven-game series if they're healthy. I think the Jazz could get one in this series. If it goes six, I would be surprised. And don't call me a hater for saying that, because I said the Jazz would win 50 games at the beginning of the year, and a lot of people laughed at me. I just don't think they match up well with Golden State. We'll be talking more NBA basketball coming up again throughout the entire week. How about this news? And I'm jumping back over to the NFL for just a moment. The Denver Broncos, Jamaal Charles, he's caused this team a lot of headaches over the last couple of years, right? He may join them now. How would you like that backfield? C.J. Anderson, Devontae Booker, and Jamaal Charles? You think the quarterback situation is going to be interesting with Chad Kelly, Trevor Siemian, and Paxton Lynch? Try this one on for size. Jamaal Charles will meet with the Broncos tomorrow. This is all according to Adam Schefter of ESPN. If he passes a physical and the Broncos medical staff gives him a favorable prognosis, the expectation is that Denver and Charles will try to close out a contract tomorrow. He's only 30 years old, tore his right ACL in October, played just three games last season because of pain in his knees. He had just 12 attempts on the season before the Chiefs put him on the IR in November. I love this guy. I don't know what he has left in the tank. He was so dynamic. He was the best all-around running back in football for a couple of seasons. But boy, he's had a lot of knee problems. And I'll tell you why I don't mind the Broncos looking at Jamaal Charles. He's such a change of pace from C.J. Anderson and Devontae Booker. And he's so dynamic. With C.J. Anderson coming off a knee injury himself, and Devontae coming off a productive year, I really think all three of these guys could complement each other. And I think it would take a lot of pressure off of whoever is underneath center. I like it. I'm really hoping this works out. Now, as far as other running backs on the roster go, the Broncos did sign Bernard Pierce as a futures player this past January. They traded Capri Bibbs to the 49ers this past weekend for D'Angelo Henderson. Basically for D'Angelo Henderson. Coastal Carolina running back. He ran a 4.5 40 at the combine, fastest of the team's backs. But Devontae Booker, C.J. Anderson, Pierce, they're all similar. Charles is so much different. 4 100-yard rushing games against the Broncos in his career. Also ran for 259 yards back in 2010. I'm a huge Jamaal Charles man, and I love the idea of this guy suiting up for the Denver Broncos. That is a story to watch. Let's move on and jump back over to the NBA. We're just flip-flopping back and forth between the NBA and the NFL. How about this story? The Golden State Warriors claim that they were rooting for the Los Angeles Clippers, not because of matchups. Nope. Matt Barnes, who I don't really care for to begin with, says he was hoping that the Clippers would get by the Jazz because there's a nightlife in L.A., and he'd rather play in L.A. than play in Utah. Here's part of the quote. There's no nightlife in Utah. Obviously, as a player, you want to be able to have a little bit of a nightlife. But the main focus is winning games. Me, personally, I want to get out there because I want to beat the Clippers. That's my former team. There's no comparison to nightlife in Utah and L.A. Now, in all fairness, I agree with Matt Barnes. And don't take that the wrong way. My favorite place to vacation is Los Angeles. I love it. I go to L.A. every chance I get. I just love the city. I grew up going to L.A. all the time. I love it out there. But should nightlife really be something that you're looking at if you're playing in the NBA playoffs? I'll tell you what, this is beyond arrogant on behalf of the Warriors. They don't get their wish. They got to come to Utah. But it strikes me as almost being overconfident. Now, I do not believe the Jazz are going to win more than one game in this series. I'm going to give them game three. I'm going to say the Warriors take 1 and 2, Jazz grab game three. Game four maybe is a good game, but the Warriors pull away late and then they close it in 5 at Oracle. That's my prediction on the series. Now, one of the reasons I love this Utah Jazz team is they're not going to respond to stupidity and arrogance like that from Matt Barnes. Part of the reason why Matt Barnes has played for as many teams as he has, including every team in the state of California, is because he has a troubled past off the court. Maybe if he played in the state of Utah, we wouldn't see Matt Barnes constantly in the news for stupidity. Maybe if he played in the state of Utah and he stayed home, he wouldn't get in trouble. Maybe that's why Matt Barnes has not been able to find any stability in any city that he's ever played in. Maybe, I don't know, wild idea. Mike Brown, acting head coach while Steve Kerr is dealing with an illness, he said he disagreed with the whole idea of the boring perception of Salt Lake City and said, quote, I think if you really want to find something to get into, I don't care where you are, you can find something to get into. Now, with these insanely cocky comments from Barnes and Iguodala, and that's the way I take it. I take it as a team that believes they're going to waltz right through Utah. They're going to waltz right through the Jazz. They want to go out and party at night because they know the Jazz are posing no challenge. That's the way I take those comments. Draymond Green was the voice of reason. He said he's began to eat more red meat to increase his red blood cell count to properly equip his body for the altitude in Utah. And he said, quote, it's the playoffs. Nobody should be worried about nightlife during the playoffs. That's the attitude of a champion. Maybe that's why Matt Barnes doesn't have a championship ring. I'm not a Matt Barnes fan. And because of these comments, I would love for the Jazz to shock the Warriors in a 7-game set. It's just not going to happen. I mean, I'm really confident in saying it's not going to happen. Let's take a look at the schedule in the NBA. Tonight, 5 p.m. start time, the Toronto Raptors travel on the road to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Love this series. I think this is the set that I would worry about if I'm a Cavalier fan, getting out of the East. If they can get past Toronto, I think they're fine. It's a bad matchup, though. Serge Ibaka is a different beast defensively than what Cleveland will see in the future or even in the last round. And you have an all-star backcourt with DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry. I love this matchup. This is a fun game tonight. Start time at 5 p.m. And then we get the Rockets and the Spurs tonight at 7:30. Tomorrow, the Jazz are part of a doubleheader at 8:30 on TNT. The Wizards and the Celtics are going to be the first game. That's tomorrow. But tonight, we get Toronto and Cleveland and then Houston at San Antonio. Let's take a look at the schedule in Major League Baseball. You know, you get day baseball games periodically, and then we don't get day baseball games for a long time. And it kind of stinks during the day. I dig day baseball. What can I say? 5 o'clock tonight, we get the Orioles at the Red Sox. The Blue Jays will take on the Yankees. The Tigers play host to the Indians. We get the Pirates at the Reds. Tampa at Miami. And then the Mets will take on the Braves. All of those games in the 5 o'clock hour. 6 o'clock, it's Philly at Chicago. The Cubbies are just 13-11 and 4-5 at Wrigley to start this season. Texas will be on the road to take on Houston. The Astros have the best pitcher in baseball this season. Dallas Keuchel. He's been the best pitcher in baseball so far. He's not the best pitcher per se, but statistically, he has been the best pitcher of this season. He's been lights out, and the Astros are 16-9. The White Sox will take on the Royals at 6:15. We get the Brew Crew and the Cardinals at 6:15 as well. Nightcap tonight, the Giants and the Dodgers. Johnny Cueto going up against Clayton Kershaw. Who's the best pitcher in the bigs? Don't get me wrong, but Keuchel statistically has been amazing. I love this matchup tonight. Cueto going up against Kershaw. Quick rundown of everything that's happening in the national sports front. We're going to talk some baseball. Coach Sean Alton of the Emory Spartans will join us. Emory gearing up for the state championship tournament this weekend. And we have to talk some boxing. It's been a while since we've talked the squared circle here on the show. But Saturday, man, what a heavyweight fight. Anthony Joshua stopping Vladimir Klitschko in the 11th round via TKO. It was just a brilliant, one of the best heavyweight fights I have seen in a very long time. Plus, we got a good one coming up this weekend. Canelo Alvarez going up against Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. So we're going to talk about that as well. Good, fun show coming up for you. It's Drive Time Sports here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. We begin on the high school baseball diamond, where Friday the Emory Spartans dropped their season finale, falling to the Gunnison Bulldogs 3-0 at home. The Spartans accumulated 6 hits, but left several runners on base and had several scoring opportunities fall short. In the setback, Zach Jorgensen was hit with a loss on the mound. He pitched 5 innings, gave up 7 hits, and just 2 earned runs. Race Nielsen pitched 2 innings in relief work. He gave up 4 hits and 1 earned run. The loss on Friday dips Emory to 6-4 in league play, and that puts them in third place heading into the 2A state championship tournament. Grand finished in second at 8-2, followed by Gunnison at 9-1. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. Later on this week, we'll go over the 2A state high school baseball pairings as we begin to prepare for the state championship tournament. We move over to Carbon High School, and the Dinos wrapped up the league season, suffering an 11-5 loss to the Canyonview Falcons Friday in Cedar City. The loss marks the third straight for the Dinos. Most recently, they suffered 2 in a row against Canyonview at home. That was last Tuesday. The Dinos now enter a bye week as the regular season comes to a close for 3A Region 12. If Juab defeats Canyonview once in their 3-game set, the Dinos will enter the state tournament as the number 3 seed. A sweep for Canyonview over Juab means that the Dinos will enter the number 2 seed. We'll have more on the state pairings later on in the week. We move over to softball, and the Emory Lady Spartans grab their signature win of the regular season as they top the Gunnison Bulldogs at home by a final score of 15-12. The loss for Gunnison is their first of the region season. Bailey Huggard pitched just over 4 innings. She gave up 9 hits and 4 earned runs, but she also accumulated 7 RBIs in the victory, which included a home run. The Lady Spartans are currently in third place in the 2A East at 5-4. As we get down to the end of the regular season, Emory will participate in a couple of non-league contests as they get Carbon on Wednesday and then Juab next Monday. The final league game of the regular season will take place this Friday against San Juan. The final 3 games of the regular season will all be at home for the Lady Spartans. Following an 8-2 win over Richfield last week on the softball field, the Carbon Lady Dinos suffered a 6-4 loss to Canyonview in a highly competitive game. The Lady Dinos led 2-1 going into the third inning before Canyonview scored 4 runs to take the lead for good and the eventual victory. Friday's loss brings an end to the regular season for the Lady Dinos in region play. They still have 3 non-league contests to go. Carbon is currently the number 4 seed from the 3A Region 12 division, which means they have already punched their ticket to the state championship tournament. Like baseball, we'll have the official pairings in the coming days. Wellington T-ball registration is currently open for ages 3-5. Registration is currently taking place at Wellington City Hall up until May 5th, which is this Friday. The cost is $25 per person. Each player will receive a hat, t-shirt, and trophy. The games will officially begin on June 6th. Again, this is T-ball registration. The cost is $25. You can register at Wellington City Hall. We move over to the national sports scene, and yesterday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the Utah Jazz advanced to the Western Conference semifinals with an impressive 104-91 victory over the Los Angeles Clippers. The win is arguably the biggest for the Utah Jazz over the past decade. Utah will continue the season tomorrow as they take on the mighty Golden State Warriors. Game 2 will take place on Thursday. Remember to follow the action on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. Start time for tomorrow's contest is set for 8.30 PM. Pre-game coverage will begin on KOAL at 8.20 as David Locke and Ron Boone bring you the play-by-play call. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
There's no crying in baseball!
Prepare the water cooler, that we may gather around it later and discuss the play ball!
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
Holy cow!
We've got to talk some high school baseball here on the show today. The regular season and the 2A classification came to a close on Friday, and now the Emory Spartans, they'll prepare for the opening round of the state tournament this Saturday. Baseball goes by in such a hurry at the high school level. The Carbon Dinos, they have one more week. They got a bye this week, so there's one more week in the 3A season, and then they'll move into the state tournament. We'll talk more about Carbon a little bit later on in the week. Right now, we will focus on Emory. Again, they closed out the regular season with a 3-0 loss to Gunnison at home. Joining us right now to talk a bit about that and the first-round matchups, we have head coach Sean Alton over the phone. Coach, as always, I appreciate you making time for us. Good to hear from you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jordan.
Coach, we've reached the end of the regular season. Emory finishes 6-4 in league play following back-to-back losses to Gunnison. Back-to-back losses to a team that goes 9-1 and wins a region championship. But those two losses, that was very competitive baseball.
Absolutely. It is. Hats off to Gunnison. They are a great team, very well coached. And, you know, it's just a game that really both games could have went either way, and Gunnison come out on top.
The first contest, Coach, we lose by one run, and that right there kind of ended all chances of winning a region championship. The following game, Friday, it was a 3-0 win for Gunnison. How much of that first loss played into the attitude or maybe the spirits of that game on Friday, knowing that you were pretty much locked in at the number 3 spot from that point on?
You know, I don't think it played that big of a deal. We're excited to play whoever we get. And right now, with that loss, the positive that comes from that, the kids really understand that, you know what, we can play with the top teams in the state. And Gunnison and Grand being, you know, a couple of the top teams, we're right there with them. And so that right there shows us what we can, you know, what we can really do in the state.
Yeah, you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. You go back to the win over South Sevier, and you talk about the win against Grand and a one-run loss to Gunnison. Those are three of the top five teams in the state, and you guys beat two of them and played to a one-run contest with the other.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and it does give our kids a lot of confidence just knowing that we can play. And it shows where we are as a team, and the kids are really excited to get this tournament underway and show the state what we can really do.
At this point in time of the season, they always say you either know it or you don't. So as far as the progression of this team goes, are you happy with where they are compared to day one?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think they've exceeded and excelled and done really well and overachieved a lot of, you know, in a lot of things. And, the kids understand what they need to do to really get it done on the ball field and how to win ball games.
You know, while this is your first year as the manager, head coach of this team, you have been around for quite some time. So you've seen things play out. As far as the regions and divisions go, is this the most competitive region that you can remember being a part of? Because for me, front to back, Coach, you're not going to find a better division here in 2A.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you nailed it on the head, Jordan. This is by far, in my mind, the most competitive I've seen this region. You know, with Grant and Gunnison and us right there at the top, you know, throw San Juan in the mix. They are a tough team, a team not to be overlooked. And so, you know, really, as competitive as it is, I think it's really going to sit well for us and help us come
state tournament play.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up San Juan because they enter a 4 seed. And I'll tell you, Providence Hall is a 1 seed. And, I don't know if you really gain a lot playing a squad like San Juan in the opening round. That's not a typical 4 seed. They have athletes on that team.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I look at our region, Jordan, I don't know if there's really any team in the state that wants to face our 2, 3, and 4 seeds as well as we've been playing in this region.
No, I agree with you 100%. Coach, let's move on and let's talk about who you guys will see first off and foremost. I know that it's not completely set right in that division, but it looks like it'll be Summit Academy. Is that the first round matchup?
Yes, that's what I've been told, and looks like that's who we'll face. I know it's still, you know, a to-be-determined thing on the website, but I've been told through sources that our first round game will be Summit Academy.
It's a team that I don't know a whole lot about, Coach. What stands out to you, or have you looked at that yet?
You know, they have won quite a few ball games. You know, they are a private school. Can't really gain too much about that. Don't know what they can and can't recruit and who they can and can't bring in. I did talk to the Grand coach just a little bit. Grand has played them twice this year and has beat them both times. I believe a 9-1 score and a 6-0 score. So I do know that, you know, coming down and playing Grand, talking to the coach, they are a very beatable team. However, you know, I talked with Manti coach too, and they say that they are a legit team. So they're obviously a team. I believe any team in the state tournament, you cannot take lightly, and you've got to go out with full vengeance and take it to them.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Sean Alton of the Emory Spartan baseball team. This will be at Kanab. So Kanab's the 1 seed coming out of the South Division. All in all, Kanab, I mean, that's a tough division, Coach, because Beaver was right there. Enterprise was right there as well. I think probably when you match up divisions, you know, one against the other, outside of the East, I think the South was pretty good. I mean, front to back as well.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's probably the number 2 region in the state that has a tougher schedule, but I feel confident. I feel that we have a great draw being the 3 seed and going to Kanab. Look at the teams they've played, teams that they've lost. You know, they have a similar record, and I feel that we match up really well with them.
Yeah, I think in comparison to going to South Sevier, as crazy as it sounds, it probably fits you guys better to be the 3 seed than the 2.
No, I agree 100%. You know, and I'm not trying to look past Summit Academy at all and get to that, you know, Kanab game, but I just feel that the 4 teams that will be down there, you know, including us, I don't think there's a better fit for us, you know, other than obviously being the 1 seed here in our region. But I feel confident, extremely confident with the way our kids can play, with their ability, you know, swinging the bat, that kind of thing. You know, I feel very confident.
I asked you this off of the cuff, who would get the ball in game 1, and you said you'd roll with Tell Gardner game 1 and then Zach Jorgensen game 2. 2 seniors that have been around the game of baseball for a really long time. I mean, that's a pretty potent 1-2 punch for the pitcher's mound. How do you manage their innings in the opening round of the state tournament?
I'm going to do like I've done all year. You know, Tell's going to go as long as he can, get up to that pitch count. You know, Tell and Zach, you know, throw Race right there into the mix. Easton Gordon, as of lately, all season long, those 4 have pitched extremely well. I just hope that we can get the run support to help them. You know, Tell and Zach are a great 1-2 punch, as you mentioned. Race has been phenomenal on the hill, and when Easton has come in, he's given us some exceptionally good innings as well. So with those 4, I feel, you know, 100% confident in their ability. I know they're going to go out and compete, and they're going to get it done on the hill for us. And with our bats, you know, we just need to get the run support and good things will happen.
Anything can happen in the state tournament, but I think this is a given. If you lose that first game, it is so difficult to come back through the loser's bracket and win a state championship. I mean, it's possible. I believe it has happened before, but there's so much emphasis in a double elimination tournament, Coach, to get that first win.
Absolutely. And that's why we're going to roll with Tell. You know, we need to get that first win, and we're going to roll with Tell, and I'm going to get him up to, you know, whatever pitch count he can get to and be successful. And, you know, I have 100% confidence in Tell, and then in the next game with Zach, same thing. You know, both great 1-2 punches, and I think we're going to be a scary team for other teams to match up with.
I know that there's so many games and you really have to go, you know, 4 or 5, sometimes even 6 pitchers deep once you get into the 2A state tournament. With that being said, you really have to rely a lot on your offense, don't you, come state tournament time? I mean, you have to score runs and bunches, and that's why you go back and you look at the state championship teams just a couple of years back. They scored a lot of runs in the state tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this year, being a pivotal year with the count, is even going to be even higher. I think you're going to see a lot of 10, 12, 15, maybe even runs upwards of 18 into the 20s. Because with pitch count, you're going to lose pitchers fast. And you're going to see teams 3, 4, 5, 6 pitchers. And so offense is going to be huge. And who can put the ball in play and score and manufacture runs.
Now, going into the state tournament, there's only a few teams that Emory has scored more runs than in league play. Does that concern you at all? Or is that stat kind of twisted based on the fact that the pitching is such high quality in the 2A East?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit twisted, to be honest with you. I mean, you look at the Jones kid from Grand and the Ward kid, you know, two great pitchers. We got Tell and Zach, throw Race in there in Easton. And then you got the two from Gunnison with, you know, Drew Hill and the main kid they brought down from Harriman. So the pitching really is just that good with those three schools and their pitching. So outside of that, I think, you know, we can score a whole bunch of runs.
Yeah, and I ask that because, I mean, outside of the 2A, you look at the 2A East and the 2A South, those were the two divisions where there were the lowest amount of runs manufactured. Now, if you look at the North and then you look at the Central, those teams were scoring in bunches. And so I don't think that's a coincidence when we're talking about the competitiveness of these two divisions. The pitching, obviously the best pitchers lie in these two divisions.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 100%. And it's going to come down who's hitting the ball that day and who can play defense and keep the errors down for sure.
Coach, last week before you go in, you have a week off before you go into the action this weekend. So what do you guys work on in practice? Is it more relaxed? Is it the same routine that it has been all year long? Do you notch it up? Do you notch it down? I mean, what do you do this week?
You know, I think we're going to notch it up just a little bit. We're going to go in and do just a whole bunch of reps. We're going to do, you know, a whole bunch of cuts. I've got to do some homework and figure out, you know, other teams pitching and what they can and can't do, and then just try to capitalize off of that. But we're going to take it serious. We're going to go into it and really get focused and come into the state tournament with a vengeance and show what Emory High baseball is really made of.
All in all, when you get to the state tournament, how does the play amplify compared to the region play? I mean, is there a noticeable difference in your eyes?
Absolutely. Just based off of, you know, personality, you know, the mental aspect of it. It's just an exciting time of the year, you know, we're to that point. And so if we can keep the kids mentally focused and disciplined, you know, good things are going to happen. But for sure, like you said, you know, region play, you go through there, you play. But come state tournament time, it does amplify just based on that, hey, you're in the state tournament, and this is exciting.
Well, Coach, it is always fun to talk with you. It's fun to get an update on Emory High School baseball. Best of luck this weekend. Hopefully when we talk next week, we're talking about two wins.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Jordan.
Definitely, Coach. Again, the Emory Spartans will open up first round action this Saturday. They'll travel on the road to Kanab. They get Summit Academy in the first round. We've got a break for just a moment. All the talk of the NFL draft and the NBA playoffs, I mean, it's great, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, there's a lot of great stuff happening in the world of boxing. We had a tremendous heavyweight showdown Saturday. Vladimir Klitschko suffering a TKO loss to Anthony Joshua in the 11th round. That was in the UK at Wembley Stadium. One of the best heavyweight fights I have seen, no lie, 10 to 15 years. That fight was tremendous. And we got a big fight coming up this Saturday, Canelo and Chavez Jr. We're going to talk some boxing. Haven't talked boxing in a while here on Drive Time Sports. That's what we'll move over to right after this, plus give you a NASCAR update on 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m.
Whoa, trouble, turn number three. It is Erik Jones hard into the outside wall, and they are still 3 and 4 wide. It looks like we're racing at Talladega.
Caution flag is out. It looked like Denny Hamlin was trying to get by Ricky Stenhouse. Got into the back of Ricky at the line. Man, that's a close one. Matt Kenseth wins stage one.
Green checkered flag is out. and Brad Keselowski has won stage two.
Dale Earnhardt Jr. into the wall that will bring out the caution. Caution waving once again, and again it's Dale Earnhardt Jr. involved.
Oh, trouble! Ty Dillon has gotten turned to the inside of the racetrack, and Clint Bowyer is just nailing him.
Matt Kenseth falling back, the field storming by. Something wrong. Now we see sparks from Kenseth's Toyota.
Larson chops him off, coming off turn number two. Nose to tail. Now it's Logano to the high side in three.
Joey Logano getting the win over his teammate, Brad Keselowski. Joey Logano, a winner here at the Richmond International Raceway.
It's time for a NASCAR Monster Energy Cup update here on KOAO 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM. And Joey Logano went from all the way in the back to the front to win at Richmond International Raceway yesterday. Logano qualified in fifth, but had to start the back after a transmission change in a race that was all about track position. The car up front stayed there for extended periods, but Logano worked his way up methodically earlier in the race, which led to the eventual victory. Following the race, Logano talked about coming from behind to grab the checkered flag.
Yeah, it was real nice. Obviously, when I got the text from Todd yesterday when I was up in the booth talking, I thought, oh, man, this is not the place you want to starting to back for a lot of reasons. For one, you know, you have 5-6 laps on your tires because qualifying. And then, you know, obviously, so you don't really have an advantage on anybody. It took us all day to at least break into the top five. We kind of level out as a, you know, 5th, 7th, 8th place car. It seemed like everyone from 4th to 10th was about the same speed. So it's just all about just gaining a little bit of track position on restarts and pit stops. And we just kind of stayed right around there. And Todd made some good calls at the end, got us some track position. We had a good pit stop at the end that maintained the track position, and then some good restarts that were able to get the lead back when everyone stayed out on old tires.
Coming in second place was Brad Keselowski. He appeared to have the fastest car on the track all afternoon. He talked about finishing third.
Yeah, I was disappointed not to bring it home, but that's just the way these things fall with double file restarts and half the field staying out and half the field not. You kind of take the good with the bad on those deals. So
third place went to Denny Hamlin. He led 59 laps in this race.
Yeah, it was it was about as good as we had. We just didn't have the speed that the other cars had. We talked about that Friday during media, but we optimized our day. It's the best we could do. And we finished right where we should have.
Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Kevin Harvick, Jamie McMurray, Ryan Newman, Kurt Busch, Eric Amarola, and Martin Truex Jr. rounded out the field of 10. Even with the second place finish, Brad Keselowski still sits at the top of the current NASCAR standings. He's got 327 points, 2 wins, 1 pole, and 7 top 10 finishes. Jimmy Johnson is currently in second, followed by Kyle Larson, Martin Truex Jr., Joey Logano, Ryan Newman, Kurt Busch, Chase Elliott, Kevin Harvick, and Jamie McMurray. 11 through 16 is Clint Bowyer, Kyle Busch, Denny Hamlin, Ryan Blaney, Trevor Bayne, and Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Eric Jones and Matt Kenseth would be the first two out of this chase for the championship. NASCAR will make its return this Sunday as the series shifts to Talladega Speedway. Start time is scheduled for noon. Again, that'll be this Sunday on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, your home for Monster Energy Cup Series racing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to tonight's main event.
It's been way too long since we have talked some boxing here on Drive Time Sports, but Saturday gave us the perfect reason to start the talk back up. Anthony Joshua stopping Vladimir Klitschko via 11th round TKO in what was the best heavyweight fight I have seen 10 to 15 years. That's no exaggeration. If you missed this fight, try to find it online. You will not be disappointed. Joshua sends Klitschko down to the canvas in round 5, has complete control of it, dominates the round. Klitschko fires back. He knocks Joshua down in the 6th. He has control of this fight until an uppercut from Joshua stuns Klitschko and eventually leads to a stoppage after Vladimir goes back down. A lot of action in this fight. Joining us right now to talk about that and this upcoming weekend with Canelo Alvarez and Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., we have Tony Whippy, our Drive Time Sports boxing insider. Tony, this is a great time to be a boxing fan.
Yeah, what a weekend, man. What a fight to bring, a big, fresh, big, gulping fresh air into the sport of boxing. this is what, you know, myself and boxing purists, this is when we talk about good fights and, you know, woe the days of the past when it comes to heavyweight fights. This is exactly what we were talking about. What happened over the weekend between Anthony Joshua and Vladimir Klitschko is a thing of beauty. Without a doubt.
It is a thing of beauty. We can talk about the logistics of this fight in general. But, Tony, did you get the feeling that with the mutual respect that these two have for one another, and again, this is the best heavyweight fight in the history of the UK, was it almost a passing of the torch moment for the heavyweight division?
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, that goes without saying. We know Klitschko, at 41 years old, he in his dominant reign, easily first year, you know, first round Hall of Famer, you know, first ballot type guy. His knockout ratio supersedes anyone else's. The guy has been a beast. Stylistically, maybe not the most entertaining for most fight fans out there, but he always got he always found a way to knock out, you know, over 90% of his opponents one way or the other. And with that being said, you know, he had some grit after losing against Tyson Fury. You know, we went back and forth on text messages about how compelling Klitschko was going to this fight, thinking that we were going to see a different Klitschko than what we've seen in you know, the last couple of years, where he was going to have a little bit more of a chip on his shoulder. And that's exactly what we saw. We saw a Klitschko that was actually using foot movement, you know, and kind of more pep in his step. He had a bounce in his step that we haven't seen since his mid-20s. And again, this guy is 41 years old. Just the angst, the attitude that he had in the ring, we haven't seen that type of version of Klitschko in a really long time, because he didn't need to really have that. You know, sometimes he would go into these fights where it was almost a shoo-in that he was going to win it, so he could just walk in there. Not necessarily like he didn't train for it. I mean, he was always dominant. But you could tell he was a different fighter on Saturday night. And, I mean, he gave it his all against a younger, fresher kid, without a doubt.
You know, there's always the talk of, is an individual past his prime? There's always a talk of that. Klitschko has now lost, Tony, the last two bouts. He lost to Tyson Fury. Now he's lost to Joshua. All in all, are you worried about his legacy? I mean, you mentioned he's a surefire first-round Hall of Famer, no doubt about it. But he hasn't been stylistically pleasing, and now he's lost his last two fights, and they were major fights. He lost to Tyson Fury somewhat convincingly. I mean, Fury worked around him, and then he gets a TKO stoppage loss against Anthony Joshua. Should boxing pundits be worried about his legacy?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think there's anything to be worried about legacy-wise. You know, if he continues on his career, which we're not sure if he is or not, but if he continues on his career and let's say he starts to get, you know, knocked out by lesser opponents in you know, devastating fashion and quicker ways and means, then, yeah, I would be more concerned from an overall health standpoint. But, I mean, if you go back and you look at Klitschko's career, he's been knocked out before. And then he retooled, he regrouped, and he went, you know, a decade strong without getting knocked out, without getting, you know, let alone even knocked down. And, you know, since then has had this outstanding career. But, yes, in the last two fights, Tyson Fury did, you know, quote-unquote, dance around him and shook him for 12 rounds stylistically. You know, outpointed Klitschko in a way that we've never saw anyone dismantle Klitschko. This loss was a different version of dismantling, but this one, you know, he went, you know, he went into the fire with Joshua, which we haven't seen Klitschko have to do probably since Samuel Peters, which you can Google that. I mean, it was over 10 years ago, let alone probably 12 years ago. So, you know, from a legacy standpoint, I wouldn't be worried about it now. Let's see. Let's talk in, you know, two or three fights if this continues. I don't think this is the same thing that when we talk about legacy and we talk about Roy Jones Jr. and the amount of losses that he's taken in the last eight fights in his career. That's a different story. I think that's just somebody that doesn't know when to quit. I think Klitschko is a much more smarter fighter, where that's not going to be the case. And kind of to your first point, if anything, I think he'd be much smarter in saying, hey, this was a passing of the torch moment. Let's let it be, and we'll continue on. You know, 5 years from now, I'll be, you know, on a float in Conestoga. So we'll go from there.
Again, our guest right now is Tony Whitby, our Drive Time Sports Boxing Insider. We'll talk Anthony Joshua here for a second. He's 27 years old. 19-0 champion, knocked off Klitschko. Again, we just talked about the resume of Klitschko. He's won a couple of gold medals on top of that. So, Tony, all in all, this kid already has a decorated resume, passing of the torch hands down. Plus, he had to dig deep for this, okay? Yes, he took control in the fifth round when he put Klitschko on the mat. But then again, Klitschko, he was able to come back up, knocked him down. And you and I were talking about this off the cuff. Klitschko's knockdown of Joshua was much more devastating than Joshua's first knockdown of Klitschko. So here we have a young kid who was taken to the brink and still found a way to get a TKO victory. I am thoroughly impressed by this performance.
Yeah, I mean, this guy walked through the fire, and what we talked about off air, I mean, the first knockdown Joshua put on Klitschko was good. It wasn't bad, not at all. But that punch, you know, that feint left that Klitschko threw and then came in with the straight right was a devastating punch. And in my perspective, you know, it's just an opinion, but my perspective, I don't think there's a heavyweight fighter right now that would have been able to take that punch the way that Joshua did. And with that, I mean, if he can take that punch, get back up, and at least deliver the beating that he did on Klitschko for the remaining round of the rounds left till the fight was stopped, I don't know if there is anyone that can beat this kid. I mean, yes, his accolades going into this fight, surely a large amount of inexperience, hasn't faced the same amount of opponents, caliber opponents that Fury or Wilder have, Deontay Wilder, that is. But even their resumes aren't necessarily that strong as well. But to beat Vladimir Klitschko by TKO stoppage, I think, is a bigger win than, you know, Fury's combined and Deontay Wilder's. This kid has a bright future, and I don't know of anything that would be able to stop him except for himself at this point.
I'll say this before we move on. I love Deontay Wilder. He's what we have wanted here in the country for a very long time, an American unbeaten heavyweight champ. I mean, that is bringing somewhat of the interest back to the division, I think, for people here in the States. However, with that being said, he's not on Joshua's level. He's not. And if this does happen to be the next fight, which I don't think it is, but if it is the next heavyweight fight we see, I think Joshua gets Wilder out within 6 to 7 rounds, Tony.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I do think it'd be a fun fight because of Deontay Wilder's, you know, we've talked about his styles before and how not as boxing IQ of an acclimate does he have. It's a little bit more rough. It's a little bit more of a unorthodox style, not necessarily from a left-handed standpoint, but for just from the overall boxing pedigree. And then you have an ex-Olympian with a very good amateur background, and his style is much more of an imperious format of it. I do think that, one, don't get your hopes up, we're not going to see this fight within the next 18 months. If we do, you know, more power to it, well, I'll be happy to see it, but I just don't think that's going to be the case. And I would pick Joshua to win regardless at this point, and 18 months from now, I probably would as well, unless something dramatically changes. There's a lot of questions to be answered from a lot of these fighters, but I think Anthony Joshua answered a big question over the weekend.
Let's talk about Saturday. It is a big fight weekend. Canelo Alvarez going up against Chavez Jr., and this is interesting. It's a big fight. It falls on the perfect weekend for this particular fight, with it being Cinco de Mayo, obviously. And looking at Canelo Alvarez, there's some story here, Tony, because he's likely to be outweighed. I mean, you and I were talking about the shape that Chavez Jr. is in. He's going to be outweighed when he steps into the ring. That's an advantage that Canelo typically always carries over his opponent when he steps into the ring. Not going to be the case this Saturday. Stylistically, I love Canelo to win this fight going away. But nonetheless, it's a big fight for boxing, and it's on a huge boxing weekend, to say the least.
Yeah, this is the biggest fight of the year that has officially been made from real boxing fans. And I hate saying it that way, but casual fans are going to be looking at other things, and that's fine. But as boxing fans go, especially, you know, Mexican boxing fans, we've all argued Canelo versus Chavez for at least the last half decade, if not even longer. You know, a lot of times it always seemed like it was never going to happen, you know, whether it's because of promotional issues or because of just overall changes in weight between each fighter. Somehow, some way, this fight got made. I was never a big proponent at this point, given Chavez's past losses and how much he went up in weight and how much he goes up in weight during the fight. Yeah, Canelo does somewhat of the same thing. I just never really thought it was going to actually happen. I kind of always felt like there was a way that there was going to be, you know, Chavez was going to pull out because of the lack of training that he does, so on and so forth. But you can tell that he's taking this fight serious, that he's willing to do what it takes to get down in the weight, whatever that necessarily means. But I also do think that we're crossing a breaking point to where he's dangerously, the photos that are coming out, he looks dangerously ill trying to make this weight. And, I've kind of been bringing it up for the last couple of days here. If anything, this is a very reminiscent fight of Oscar De La Hoya going back down in weight to fight Manny Pacquiao. And if we look at that fight, Manny Pacquiao being the younger guy, the smaller guy, the faster guy, the more youthful guy, the guy that had less, at that time, less miles on the odometer, if you will. And I do think that this is going to be that type of style of fight where you have Julio Jr. that's going to be draining himself just to make the weight, going to go back up, probably going to go an easy 20 to 30 pounds, and I say that respectively, back up in weight, probably going to be about 180, 185 come fight night, while Canelo's probably going to be between 170, 172, maybe 125, but he's going to be the fresher fighter. I think he's going to just throw more punches. It is, to me, going to be a fun fight while it lasts.
No, I agree. I think those who pay for this fight, you're going to see a lot of action on the card front to back. And you and I were talking a bit about the undercard just a little while ago, Tony, off of the cuff. I mean, all in all, I think it's going to shape up for a great week of boxing. Unfortunately, Tony, I'm out of time for this particular segment, but I would love to catch up with you next week, recap the Canelo-Chavez fight, and then we have another one that I'm really excited about at the end of the month as well, with Errol Spence Jr. going up against Kell Brook. I think that could be a tremendous fight as well, so I would love to get you back on in between.
Yeah, let's absolutely do it. Boxing is looking real good right now.
It definitely is. I mean, it's a perfect time for boxing. Tony, always a pleasure to get you on. Thank you.
All right, man.
And there's definitely some great boxing coming up. Great to get Tony back on the show. We've got a break for just a moment. We'll come back, put the final touches on this Monday edition of Drive Time Sports when we return here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.